good. Well, we're...
Well, anyway, what I was about to say was, and this is these things stick in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe we're way off the topic, but piecing together my father's history. You see, after he left, and it was in 1912, and he wasn't on the Titanic because we discovered just in recent years, he must have traveled from Göteborg to Hull, across to Liverpool, and then from Liverpool and not from Southampton. That was just one...
Yeah.
Anyway, we all know 1912, Titanic. Mm. He never got in touch with his father again.
Mm.
And they were two stubborn Scandahoovians, I'll tell you.
Mm.
I know my father was, his father must have been. Anyway, my uncle told me that my grandfather had spent the rest of his life trying to locate his son, and he hired Pinkertons. He obviously must have thought he was in the United States, you see.
Oh, yeah.
And so my father, I told you that my older brother became an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I graduated as a lawyer and then was called to the bar, on the day of my call to the bar, my father said to me, "I have found the address of my brother in Göteborg, and I'd like you to write to him and tell him I'm here."
Mm.
46 years later.
Oh.
Well, of course I did. Mm. And his brother, it turned out, was a leading businessman in Göteborg, and his brother flew out to see him. His brother was about 10 years younger. And my father had a stroke just before his brother arrived, so they were reunited. He had two sisters, and my wife and I went to Sweden, and they all, after my father's death, and they all met us at the airport, and we went to parties at everybody's home. Cousins of mine have, on their travels, stopped in Vancouver to see us, and we've been back to Sweden a number of times. So it's an interesting history.
So
I didn't know this. It wasn't this package of knowledge that I had. It's unfolded over time. And so when I say I chose law, I think really it was not because of all of these things I've discussed, because I didn't know about them.
Well, as a biographer, and I've written two biographies, I've discovered that that complexity is a good thing. You look for complexity in people's characters because it suggests a depth and or a tension between someone. So your father certainly sounds like a complex personality.
Well, he had, after he really was forced out of the police, he had an inadequate pension, and he had four children, and he was unemployed for a period of time, which made him, I'm sure, desperately unhappy. And but we managed somehow, and he lived to see his oldest son graduate in engineering, and became a lawyer, and we had a younger brother and sister who didn't go to university, but they it was interesting to over the period of decades to learn more about this tale.
My other book, I've written the last two books that I wrote on logging on the BC coast. I almost brought you one, but brought you Home Truths instead. It just came out. But there were lots of Swedes and Finns in the logging camps. They were, most of the Fallers and the Buckers were Swedes. And I've interviewed many of them, many of the older ones, who did tend to come from the northern, poor, agriculturally marginal parts of Scandinavia.
Yeah.
But your dad doesn't fit that.
No, he doesn't. That's what kind of mystified us once we learned, especially when my wife and I went back to Sweden about, 5 or 10 years after his death, I can't remember now, and discovered that he came from a well-known family, well-to-do. In fact, one of my cousins drove me to see a lovely park on the outskirts of Gothenburg and said, "This used to belong to our family."
So it was a bourgeois kind of background, but
yeah,
upper middle class by the sounds.
Oh yes, yes, and in fact, today many of my cousins are lawyers and judges in Sweden, as you would expect.
How? What? So much for immigration, cleaning the slate. It sounds like you.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? But you know, both my father and my mother were great readers. Always books in the house. We were always encouraged to take an interest in current affairs. And I mean, I think that that having parents who believe in the importance of reading and studying and learning really makes a difference in the lives of most children. It becomes something that they realize is an important part of life. And but there it is.
Can I ask about your mother? Was she connected? Was she tied into the Grand Trunk Pacific?
No.
Railway.
No. Her father was from Northern Ireland, and her mother from the United States, from Illinois, I believe. Island. They were farming. This is before the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm named after my maternal grandfather. His name was Tom, Thomas MacDonald. He came with his mother from Northern Ireland as a teenager from Cookstown, and he was a very strong Protestant, as you would expect. And he farmed on Sea Island and Lulu Island, and he was up north in Telqua for many years farming there, and he had 10 children, and we have a picture of them taken about 1910 or 11, because my mother was in the photo. She was the second youngest, 2 or 3. And they were, I mean, the boys ranged from 22 on down, and the girl, everybody. The boys were wearing suits and ties, and now they were working on a farm, and it wasn't a big farm, it wasn't very lucrative, but we always had, boatloads of relatives on my mother's side as we grew up, and saw a lot of them. Nobody, absolutely nobody on my father's side, and he never talked about it. So. And we never had anything to do with the Swedish community.
Did you learn any Swedish?
No, my father... we discovered when we were in high school, my older brother studied German and discovered that my father spoke German, which he'd never revealed to us, but Germany was a country that was closely linked to Sweden. Father was growing up, and I think it was his biggest trading partner, and so on. So Swedes learned to speak German, and they must have learned to speak French, or perhaps my father learned to speak French in Montreal with the fire department, because I studied French, and it turned out he spoke French.
And English? Did he learn English?
Oh, I'm sure he must have spoken English back in Sweden, and he never spoke Swedish in the home, and the only trace of a Swedish accent that he had was that he said yes for yes. That's the only thing I remember that was out of the ordinary, because as a child, a young person, you're always watching for your parents to say or do something will embarrass you.
Which is common, yeah. Well, the loggers, they're all the loggers' jokes about, Sven who comes down into the cookhouse for breakfast, and he says, just when I learned how to say yam, they go and change it to yelly. And there's a whole range of those, and it's usually the J and the Y. But if he had that worked out, then it suggests that he learned languages early.
Oh yes, and we discovered when we went to Sweden after my father's death, my uncle showed me a medal that the King of Sweden had given to our family in the early years of the 19th century, because our family was from French speaking from Belgium, Berger, Wallonians, and when the Swedes invited one of Napoleon's marshals, Bernadotte, to become king, it must have been just when the Napoleonic Wars were being concluded, I can't remember. But the families from Belgium, because Belgium was one of the cradles of the Industrial Revolution. Hmm. And they brought the Bergers, who soon became Barrières, to Sweden to start the iron and steel industry. Hmm. And these are fragments you pick up, and in fact, we have a history of our family written in Swedish, which nobody in our family is able to read. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting mm-hmm. background, but it explains why we had nothing to do with the Swedish community. And my father wouldn't have felt any real affinity mm-hmm. with them. And he was pretty standoffish anyway, and no doubt his background in the police meant you had to be careful about making friends.
One of the things that I read online mentioned that his mother was had a noble or aristocratic background.
Yes,
she
did. But but she left her husband when my father was a baby, and in those days you didn't leave your husband, and if you did, you couldn't take your children with you. So he was raised by by a housekeeper, and then by his stepmother when my grandfather remarried. And yes, she. I think she was of noble birth, and then she remarried a Count Rappe. And they live in Stockholm and were in touch with a cousin of mine who's about my age, who's a lawyer in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. who's descended from my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
But our main contacts are with the family in Gothenburg. A lot of this we know too because my sister, my late sister, was a family historian, and she ran to earth all of these things. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting side.
Well, it is. It reminds me of the, in the logging companies that I've written about, the tendency for people to find employment that resembled the employment that, from home. So, for example, a Dutch guy went to the hiring hall and he said, "I need a job." And they said, "What can you do?" And he said, "Well, I used to push barges around the canals in Holland." So they said, "Well, you can be you can work on the boom,"
mm-hmm.
"with a pike pole." So he went to work in the boom at Royston. And there's examples of accountants who had a white collar background in England and became white collar here. So there's actually some continuity in immigration, which isn't supposed to happen because they're in a resource rich area. You're supposed to just go and get a job in mining, farming, logging.
Right. By the way, I was at a party for a woman who wrote a book about called Eating Dirt, about
Charlotte Gill.
Yes, about replanting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the book was very good. I worked in the summers when I was at university in the logging industry, and then after that at a sawmill in North Vancouver every summer, and I worked from and jobs were plentiful in the 50s, you know. I worked from I'd finish my exams and then I'd start work at the sawmill the next day and go right until the day before I was to return to university. And so that was about, must have been 4 or 5 months every summer.
Where did you work in the woods?
Well, in the woods, I spent a summer in a three-man logging camp. Near Alta Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I spent one summer there, and we did everything. We cut this was a cedar swamp, as I recall, and we cut these down for telephone poles.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only three of us: the owner, his father, and me. And we all stayed in the old man and I stayed in a bunkhouse. Owner and his wife and children had a little cabin of their own. It was interesting. We would get them to the rail siding.
The BC Rail was up there.
Yeah, it was called the PGE in those days. And we would lever them onto a flat car. Then they'd be taken away. After that, I got a job at the sawmill in North Vancouver, which was called Norwood Sawmills. And my family lived in Deep Cove, so I could bicycle into work every day and home again. Well, I spent another summer working at Mackenzie Barge and Derrick near Dollarton. I think I was still in high school when I went there, and we repaired barges, they also built ships, small vessels. I never worked on that side. I think I was 17 or 18, and I was just a laborer. But it was those were interesting. And in fact, after I became a lawyer, I remember when I worked in the sawmill. By that time, all the other guys knew I was going into law, and there was a big inquiry into the Vancouver City Police, and the lawyer who later became a judge, Tom Norris, had walked out of the inquiry. Someone was no longer represented. I don't think it was Norris, it was somebody else. I remember one of the guys I worked with, Big Frank, who didn't speak an awful lot of English. We worked in the green chain, you know. And he had the paper, and he said, "You've got to go and take his place." And when I became a lawyer, I was the lawyer for the Vancouver local of the IWA for a number of years.
So you had the actual experience in the
oh, I knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't today, because these places are so modernized, and they in those days the Vancouver local of the IWA had about 12,000 members. I mean, and I'm not sure the IWA throughout the province is more than 20, 25, but today, excuse me, just a second. Well, I'm diverting you and diverting myself. So should we come to law school when I get back? Just give me a minute.
I'm just going to press the button here to stop temporarily again.